Welcome to the Humans and AI Podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Okay, so hi, David. Thank you very much for joining to the Humans and AI Podcast. I appreciate a lot that you make time for this. I've read a little bit about you. Very interesting story, like a long journey as well. You're daughter, you're like from Canada, then in US, you went as well in Europe, and now you're living in Australia, Sydney. Before going into right now, you are in this decider, right? So before going into all that, the business part, I would like to learn more about you in your more personal side. Like, you started as biology. So how does lead you to business? And right now, artificial intelligence, AI too.
Yeah. Good morning, Flor, from dark Sydney, dark and cold Sydney this morning. Thank you for having me, by the way. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, how do you get from being a biologist to working in AI? It's a really good question. Some days, on the hard days, I ask myself that same question, Flor, to be completely honest. But what choices did I make to get me here? But I think looking back, I've been asked this question before, and you know, there's a couple threads that pull it all the way through. First of all, it's biology is just the catch-all for it. There's biochemistry, there's genetics, there's chemistry, there's organic chemistry, all those things. And there's probably three things that I can think about. One is I vividly remember when I was back in my third year and we were doing game theory. And game theory is really fascinating. It's like how animals work in packs, how the statistics of animal design and come through. And you start to see that through the business world. So there's been like elements across my career for the last kind of 25 years where I've been able to spot that and go, wait a second, I learned that in university. The second thing is like what most people don't understand about the sciences, especially life sciences, is there's a lot of math in there. There's a tremendous amount of math. And that math has pulled me through and been the backbone for a lot of my success over the past kind of 25 years or so. And increasingly, like I see it every single day, Flor, is like the miniaturization of technology and the human body and kind of the world and chemistry. And often I just use the term SP1 and SP2 in terms of like neutrons and photons and things like that. But the world is getting bigger, but at the same time, the technology is getting smaller. And so I see these like elements of biology everywhere in the new technology, and especially in Decider. Like, we're a business that's making big things very small, making workflows very small. And you see that I have flashbacks and deja vu sometimes about opening up my old biology textbooks and thinking about how the world works and how evolution has made things. That's that. So yeah, it was an interesting piece in coming to Australia. I was educated in Canada, and then coming to Australia for my master's degree, it was a big jump. Australia for Canadian, Australia is a very exotic place. It's literally like Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere. It's like the exact opposite parts of the planet. So coming over here was a really exciting journey for me. And it was so exciting that I stuck around for 25 years. Flor.
Wow, that's great. So as well that you right now, as we say before, you are the executive director at Decider, but you've done a lot of things before as well. Like, you work in bigger companies as well, apart from startups. You as well, you're an advisor and a co-founder of C2 Investment. So you are an investor. How do you deal with everything, cope with everything? Are you doing everything at the same time? Yeah.
Yeah, not well some days, Flor. But I think number one is I've always followed things that were intellectually interesting, right? Always frontier technologies. And I remember when I first started working, one of my goals was I wanted to travel the world and have a business pay for it. And that was like my real goal. My other goal is I wanted to be the CEO of a $1 billion company by the time I was 30. That was a bit naive, but nevertheless, it's a good aspirational goal. But yeah, I've always followed things that were a blend of technology, frontier thinking, and like intellectually like interesting businesses, whether or not they like intersected with people and technology, or I've worked in large public companies as a managing director of a fleet company during electrification when electric vehicles were coming out. And all of that, again, the thread of mathematics carries through all of the things that I've done over the past 25 years. But yeah, it's, I think it's always just been part of my desire to travel the world and to meet amazing people. And along the way, as you continue to grow your network and you grow your worldview, kind of opportunities jump in your lap. How you manage it all, that's a good question. I think, like, number one thing is, interestingly, in this kind of age of AI, as we put more technology into our lives, my success has been built on the people who I've met along the way and who I've built deep working relationships with and trust with those people. At Decider, I'd say that of the currently 50 people in the organization, I would have worked before in another life with maybe 15 to 20. And in the SLT, I would have worked with or been a client partner with all of them. And so that's been really important along the way to be able to do all of these things simultaneously. And I carry the hours of a farmer, Floor. So early to bed and early to rise. In a global world, you start at 4. That means you can catch the Eastern time zone of the US and the Western, the West Coast. And then you carry on to Australia and so on and so forth. Europe gets a little hard. CET or talking to Sweden on a Friday night is not necessarily the best of things. But sometimes you have to just make the time to get it all in.
Okay, thanks for sharing. Let's get into So Decider is, for my understanding, the AI business operating platform for small, medium enterprises, right? So you describe a great flattering in tech teams, right? So what does that look like from your viewpoint?
Yeah. I think it's interesting. We were just talking before we started that today ChatGPT launched GPT-5, which can essentially build a full application, all the code, right, from start to finish. Is the world is like fundamentally changing because software is becoming generalized and software is becoming accessible to everybody. And so when that starts to happen, executives or business leaders, or even just let's call them small business owners, can net the opportunity for them to see through their organization with tools like Decider and other AI, it just becomes a lot easier. And if I think back to when I was the managing director of this large fleet company, there was 1,000 people in this company, right? And there was layers of humans who had tasks and who were dedicated to tasks. Leadership as a business leader became more about delegation and roll-ups of information to make that. But AI allows leaders now to see through the entire organization. And so you don't really need all those layers to be able to make decisions and to set goals. And if AI is starting to do, tongue-in-cheek, I always say, more of the baloney, right, which is the stuff that humans don't want to do, and it's doing those at a predictable and consistent pace with predictable and consistent outcomes, then, you know, you start to look at your organization a little bit differently, I'd say. You don't need as many layers in your organization. And interestingly, those layers are not, they are at the bottom. Yes, of course, AI is starting to take away things like the more administrative activities. But interestingly, it's like in the middle and sometimes high middle in terms of the management layers that you don't really need. Because I could use myself as an example, right? I can see everything that's going on in the organization and pretty much at any time. And increasingly, like, our goals at Decider is to elevate the humans to more higher order work in their roles. And so that actually, if humans are more productive in your organization, are more creative, the je ne sais quoi that they have in their abilities is being utilized at a higher level, then you have a closer connection to those people. So yeah, less layers. I think, Floor, I think businesses will continue to polarize. So you'll get lots and lots of smaller businesses by human headcount in the future. And the big gargantuan businesses, they'll probably get a bit bigger. But that's because there will probably see some intersection with hardware in addition to software become secondary to this kind of what I think is the big new hardware or robotics revolution that's coming.
Okay. For those who are just starting, junior engineers, data scientists, or product people, how should they be thinking about building careers where AI right now is not just a tool, but it's actually not even assistant, it's even your colleague. You can just put it in that way.
Yeah. So there's a couple things to think about, Flora. In another life, I worked for probably the largest company in the world that provided essentially model training for all the large language models, large vision models, and large geospatial models. on the planet. And so I was surrounded by, I had a team of 400. I like to say I was the dumbest of 401 people in that organization. So lots of tweed jackets and elbow patches. And we worked on the fundamental language training for these large language models. And that included multilingual, it included dialect, semantics, and those types of things. Like why that's important, that story is, I learned of the importance of language in working with AI. So for those young people coming out, I would say that there's three critical things that they need to be focused on to be successful in kind of this AI future. The first one is a deep understanding of language. Talking to AI is different than talking to humans, right? AI understands language better than most humans, right? And there's a difference. There's really like nuanced difference between words, right? And to understand like to get a dictionary, let's just be simple, like to get a dictionary or a thesaurus, that could be a very powerful tool when you're starting to communicate to AI, right? Because you can be more efficient and your precision is higher. So that would be number one. Number two is it bridges on language. It's your ability to actually take what's in your head and actually communicate that verbally. I worked on this awesome project. I have two young daughters, Floor, and I spend a lot of time with them, and I want to, like, they're 8 and 12, and I've been using AI with them for many years now to equip them for this like new future, for this ambient computing future. And I like to tell the story of my eldest daughter, and she had a book report, and the assignment was, okay, you have to draw this picture and you have to read the book and draw this picture and submit it. And my daughter's name is Olivia. I got Olivia to ask her teacher if she could use AI to generate the imagery for the book report. And so she convinced her teacher. So well done. She's a daughter of her own persuasive father. But she was able to then, we went into Midjourney and we talked about how she wanted the image to look, right? And so she told me and I typed it in for the first go. And then the image came up in Midjourney and I said, Olivia, is this what you imagine it to be in your mind? And she said, no. And I said, what do you imagine? Do you want it to be more spooky or do you want it to be this or that? And we went through 30 prompts, right? Where at the end of it, the image looked very different. And I asked her the question, I was like, is this what it looks like in your mind? And she said, yes. And so the moral of that story is that it took a long time for her to actually communicate the feelings and the taste and the touch and all these things that came out of that image. And that's an important thing to be able to communicate that, right? If you're building products in the future, if you're building AI products in the future, building software products, this is an amazing tool that can do all these things. So that would be the second thing is like how to translate kind of your internal or that hidden tact knowledge externally. And then the last thing is an accounting degree. Because what's not going to change is tax regulations. It's how to set up a business. It's how to read a balance sheet. It's how to build a good P&L. It's how to understand your operating costs, your goals, and your aspirations, and how they translate into commercial outcomes. And I think when we look into the world, like the technologists who have built amazing companies, they're all very commercial. And I think that people need to have that really, that thread of commerciality. I wish I would have taken more accounting in high school, Floor. I didn't think about that at the time, but I wasn't mature enough. But boy, oh boy, I was lucky I did my MBA because I had a really hard crash course in how to read a balance sheet, right? How to construct a proper P&L, how to do financial modeling. And I think a lot of people do not have any idea how to read a balance sheet. But if they did, they might make different decisions. So I'd say those three things when graduates are thinking about kind of tools to equip, because the future is like ambient computing. We will be talking, right, to this AI. And so what do you say, right? What do you say? And what you say can make you more money, simply put.
That's very good advice, because actually talking about accounting, I don't have any clue either. So It's not late. It's never late.
Not too late. It's not too late.
Okay. No. Oh my God. So I read some posts of you saying that individual productivity is exploding because of AI. But you say that the organizations are not that efficient doing that. So can you explain more about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're just starting to exit kind of the individual productivity boom. So I think about it in three big buckets, right? So you've got individual productivity. So that's us using ChatGPT, right? Simply put, or Anthropic or Claude or any of the tools out there. And so as employees in the organization, we now have like researchers at our fingertips, right? We can now finesse an email. We could do all these kind of individual things that make us better. But there's two things that come out of that. A new term, I think McKinsey was talking about it. They call it productivity leakage. Floor, you and I have ChatGPT. We write a really great summary of this meeting and it was great. And we go, oh, I did that in 2 minutes. I'm gonna go get a coffee. And coffee sales are booming. I'd like to plot that coffee sales against ChatGPT usage. But what the result is, like, that's not reflected in the organizational success because it's too ad hoc, right? It's not coordinated. And then the second thing is you now get to team productivity, right? And these are point solutions that are out there, Floor. So there's a litany of them, right? There's point solutions for small business. We call them vertical AI solutions here at Decider. So think about your CRM system. So Salesforce has Einstein, which is its AI agent. HubSpot has Breeze. Atlassian has Rovo. Choose your mega SaaS company and they're like weirdly named agent. Now, that can help coordinate teams in a kind of, let's call it a higher degree. But you're still getting pocketed productivity within the sales team. So let's say the sales team can now use Einstein to write perhaps more persuasive emails to customers. It helps with some prioritization. The sales function may experience some productivity gains, but it's not distributed in a coordinated way across the organization. And the reason why is Salesforce is Einstein. It might help you sell more to your top customer, but it doesn't know if that top customer is a poor payer, because it's not connected to the accounting system. It doesn't understand the flows of receivables that are coming in from that customer group. And so the next step would be organizational productivity. And I think that's where we're all going to. Inside Partners just yesterday, they were talking about kind of system stacks, right, when it comes to AI. And that's a place that Decider has been playing in for the last year and a half. We call it horizontal AI, which means that, Floor, when you and I go into ChatGPT, right, if we write a big prompt, right, if you give your AI more context, you get a better result, right? As opposed to a two-line prompt. The same thing goes for organizational productivity, right? AI is like fundamentally a horizontal technology. So the more context it has, the better results that it's going to get. And so that's why I think we'll start to see the emergence of horizontal AI or system-based AI, which means that the artificial intelligence can see your accounting data as readily as it can see your Shopify data, right, coming in and your product sales coming into the organization. So I think that's where the world is bucketed now. And we're seeing this, not surprisingly, since November of 2022, this amazing explosion in individual productivity. But you're still not seeing it even at the sovereign level, right? At the country level, you're seeing like very relatively flat productivity gains. Even in Australia, productivity has been flat for 20 years. And we've had a SaaS and internet revolution, but productivity has stayed flat. And even in America, productivity gains haven't been really realized when it comes to, certainly with artificial intelligence because it's too early, but I don't think it will properly kind of pop in the GDP productivity of a country, probably until we get to more system level integration of AI.
All right. So do you have any, in this old sphere of AI, there's so many people who are kind of, for some people, they're very inspiring. For some people, not. But I'm not gonna get into that side of the interview. What I mean is, like, there's a lot of, let's say, people who inspires, right, who are in AI and doing a lot of big stuff, or big building big companies. So, do you have any person that would you say, or any to mention that? Oh, this guy, he inspires me. What he's doing in AI, for example, do you have? It doesn't have to be a big guy. It doesn't have to be. It maybe can be even a friend of yours, somebody who's building something in AI.
Yeah. My business partner, Paul, he always inspires me. He's always thinking about crazy new things. So it's probably good. I've got a great inspirational person who sits beside me in the office. For the more popular people, I don't think anybody, Floor, to be completely honest, like no one really comes to mind, to be completely honest. Again, probably like you and everyone else, I consume incredible amounts of information, right, into my feeds every single day. I think the celebrity business people, it's never been one of the things that I've looked for. Like I prefer rather to start my day going and looking at papers with code. So I look at research papers and that's where I'm looking at to really find inspiration about what's next. I got to work with, on that data labeling and training company, we got to work with a lot of the frontier university programs and some of the amazing AI that's coming. Like one university had a 20-year horizon that we were working on. We worked on 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and 20-year horizon projects. And now I think I get my inspiration from the research, Floor, and looking at what's coming next. I'm passionate about data federation, right? How do we protect this, our own personal data? And how to, you know, as we're starting to interact with this kind of amazing intelligence, how do we protect that? How do we use it more powerfully, right? Because we create a lot of really amazing personal data, but a lot of that's just wasted because of it can't be used. So yeah, that's the floor, to be completely honest. I don't have any shrines. I don't have any shrines in the office that I pray to the AI business gods towards.
Okay, I appreciate your honesty. Yeah, but sometimes it was like some people are very obsessed with some big names. Yeah, so I was like, I'm going to just check on you. Yeah, you say that currently AI assistants are like the near the third line, right? What's the evolutionary leap you think we are on?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe first, let's talk about like what's the problem with AI agents? Okay, so as humans, we love to anthropomorphize things, right? We like to put human qualities on it. AI is inhuman, so that's statement number one, right? And the second piece is you can't just jam a conversational agent on top of a business. So number one, I have learned from my direct experience that building enterprise grade AI agents is actually very expensive. Like no matter what on YouTube that you can build one in 15 minutes or less, there's a big difference when you have to run that in your business. So that would be number one. And there's actually two really direct mathematics problems that come out of AI agents today. If you're using an AI agent, which is principally conversational or Gen AI, there's kind of two things that happen. As you start to chain more tasks together with an AI, right, in a conversational AI, what happens is your consistency or your quality starts to dig pretty quickly. So there's a direct correlation between more tasks and lower quality scores. And what do businesses need? They need consistency, right? So when you run an AI, you want it to run exactly the same way each time, right? And so what the world is running into now, and why we don't see more commercial deployments of AI, is because it gets really exciting because you start to run your AI agent and you're like, wow, this is really remarkable. But once you start running it through thousands of cycles, they're connected to neural nets. Like we still actually don't know how a neural net really works. There's a whole body of research to try and figure out what happens in the brain of this AI. So that would be problem number one. And if you think about a business, it's complicated, right? Complicated workflows. There's lots of branching, there's lots of routing and things like that. And then the second piece that's facing into AI problems AI agents is an economics one. As you start to add more tasks together, what ends up happening is essentially generative AI has to keep more in memory. So there is a quadratic increase in cost the longer your workflow you're going to have. And so what people haven't realized yet is like if you start putting in a conversational agent, it's going to get really expensive, like very expensive very quickly. And in many cases with your customer acquisition costs or how your operating business looks and how your margin powers your cost base, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So those two mathematic problems create this issue with AI agents. And so what you need is you just need to start making agents much, much smaller, or what's called stateless agents. And so I think the next evolution is what we call agentic apps. And so agentic apps will be smaller workflows. And as you start to chain these smaller workflows together in a stateless way, they can address those two big problems, which are degrading consistency and increasing costs. Because if you have more conditional logic in your business, then it can start to get a bit more, the economics start to work.
Okay. Actually, you already talked about agentic apps. That was the question that I wanted to ask you. So thank you.
No worries.
So how is a decider applying agentic apps?
Yeah. Much to like my last answer. So what we've done at Decider, instead of addressing big chunky AI agents, we actually gone the opposite way. We started really small. And what Decider does is a little bit differently. And there's different ways to describe it that kind of powers our business. But principally, we're like an agentic ERP system. So enterprise resource planning, right? And those are typically reserved for humongous companies where they connect all the data together, right? And all that data is in a symphony and it was orchestrated perfectly. I know that's the promise of ERP systems. But what our system does as a horizontal platform, it brings in all your business data and essentially our schema agentically manages it. So AI is actually organizing your data. And so when you have perfect data, right? horizontal data, you can then start putting agentic apps that sit on top of it. And by stacking those agentic apps together, you could start to get workflow. So we work in our business. So the smallest unit is a task. When you chain tasks together, that's a workflow. When you chain workflows together, that's a process. And when you chain process together, that's an app, right? And so by starting atomically and small, what ends up happening is like our system uses humans that can do a task. So humans aren't taken out of the loop. They're just used at the right time. You can use AI or tokens, right? And that's far less expensive than a human, but it's still expensive to my earlier argument when you start chaining them together. But most importantly, because of our system and our schema, is that a lot of our system is conditional logic. And when you have conditional logic, that's very cheap, right? Because if you're looking at a Lambda call or a calculation in a database server, it's 1/100 of a cent for every 1 million calculations. So that's really what our system does. So very simply, we bring in your data, we organize it, and AI manages and structures that data. And then sitting on top of it, you're able to add apps to your business, which are workflows. So just like your phone, when you get your iPhone, the success of the iPhone was not just the hardware, but it was the app store. And our platform will open up to businesses to build agentic apps on it. And we're going to find an accountant who does the best reconciliation in America, right? And that app you can add to your business and you can install their intelligence, like that accountant's intelligence. You can go to the best podcaster, right? Who asks the best questions. And your questions can be installed into one of the customer's businesses, right? And you get an install fee, you get a what we call a flow fee. So every time that process is run, it costs money, like a flow, and then you can get a margin from it. And so one of the cool things and really exciting things about our platform is that as it starts to grow and the ecosystem grows, you can literally install the highest intelligence around the world into your business. And then it runs consistently and it runs economically.
Okay, so talking a little bit about, because now you say a bit of humans, I was like, okay, that's a good question now about humans. How do you balance in your company the human side with the technology side? Like, how do you balance both sides in your operationals?
Yeah. So we had the advantage of using our own technology from the very beginning. So I think our company actually would reflect what a company will look like in the future. 70% of our product, 70% of our staff are product and engineering. So that's the first thing, right? So we look a lot differently than the typical SaaS company who has a big SDR and account management footprint or operational footprint. How we do that is we have a concept in our business called the factory. And so every employee in our organization starts out with essentially 4 hours a week, and then they move to 8 hours a week, where they actually, their job is to think about the tech knowledge and the hidden knowledge in their organization to build workflows in their job, right? And so essentially a day a week of all of our staff, they are building agentic apps in our platform to make them to essentially start to productize their work. And so how I think about humans is always, we always try and get to the highest order activities for our staff to do. And everybody here wants to be, we could think of it a different way. We like everyone to be lazy here, right? So if you don't have to do it, if you don't want to do it, see if you can build it into the platform and make an app for it. And if they are successful doing that, it's celebrated in our organization. So we want to have more human conversations in our organization. We want to be talking about the ethical impacts of our technology. We want to talk the really hard stuff that AI can't do yet. That's where we want to be spending our time in staffing. And we have a high degree of discrimination when it comes to people who are coming into the organization. But that means like we welcome everybody, of course, but really it's a different type of job than many people are used to. So we spend a lot of time in meetings, right? Talking about really difficult concepts. And then we go away and we see if we can start to build those things into our system. And it's like, Floor, one of the biggest things for my personal leadership that's been really hard, it's actually literally taking what's in my brain when I do a task and putting that into a system. It is much harder than I thought it would be, because like often we think about six things concurrently when we're doing one task, right? And it's really hard to actually go out of autopilot and go, wait a second, I got to pause here. When I'm writing that public market release, or I'm approving that spend, or I'm doing those executive functions, like, what the hell am I thinking about when I'm doing that? What's my strategic frame? And how much of my system one is your biology thinking? System two is your higher order thinking. And like, how much of my system one or my lizard brain is influencing this decision? And so that's been really hard. But sorry, long answer to your question, but we try and really move our staff to the higher order activities in their organization. And we invest a day a week in creating and actually productizing their work. And we celebrate that when it is productized.
That sounds great, actually. I like it. Like, you basically automate the easy thing, and then the most difficult thing, then the human can do it. You know? So it's more productive and efficient. So it's great. You actually talk a little bit about ethical topics, right? So going a bit into these lines, where do ethics fit into building autonomous AI agents with business?
Yeah, there's two angles that you could attack that at, Flor. So going back to model training and like underlying model development, there's still an incredible amount of bias in these models. So that's a fact, right? If you're a Black American, then if you're using one of the text-to-speech models, so that's Siri or Alexa or anyone that, it's only going to work 6 out of 10 times for you. So those are things that still need to be addressed, right, in the underlying model development. And what most people don't know is like these amazing large language models, they were literally built on the backs of millions of humans who were training them. And so what you want to do is you want to get as much diversity as possible when you're doing these model training, right? So, you know, my Canadian accent in Australia, it doesn't really work with my Alexa device. So I actually have to change my Alexa device to Canada setting to make sure it works properly. But having more diversity of people who are participating in training the models, that could really help these models work for everyone. So that would be from the bottom up. From the top down in ethics, it goes back to what I said earlier about language and the specificity of language. Is like, now it's up to the leaders to really make sure that the consistency in AI is really high, because that can cause problems, right? Because we have an obligation to be able to keep our customers' data safe, right? That's number one. And so you want to be able to create a system in your corporation or your organization that can maintain the table stakes things. And it hasn't happened yet, but for what's coming, there'll be some mad AI leakage. There'll be poor business operations and AI just leaks out that data, right? In a conversational chat or whatever, wherever it is. And the second thing is, you know, what AI can do is it can find prospects, it can find target markets at a much higher level of precision than humans can do. And so when you think about how we're going to market, how we're going to use this AI, I think a lot of people today are using it as a blunt instrument, right? Which is, oh, I'll get an AI to call and spam call people to be able to do things, where we need to move to the more classic full service deployment of AI. So what are your values as a company? Like, where will you stop? What is your actual customer segment? It's not just everybody, right? Which AI can start to align, which is really exciting. But it gets back to what I think will, I wrote a post yesterday and I said, we're going to move away from prompt engineering to goal design. So it's a big leap. If you're a business owner, what are your aspirations? What are the values of your product? Who do you want to benefit? Who do you want your product to benefit? And so those are questions a lot of like leaders don't even have time to think about because they're busy doing their accounting on Saturday morning. But if they don't have to do that, it's a hard question, right? When you really think about it, for your podcast audience or for our customer base, then the more time you spend on it, typically the better it is. So I think that ethical component comes into it. So I would say underlying model development is critical and the diversity of participation and training is really important, right? Setting your systems up in a safe way so that the data that you collect and you generate on your customers is held safe and true. And the last thing is like, what is your product? What is the underlying value of your product? And how is that going to benefit the world? I'll just say generally, but your customers.
Okay, that's a very complete answer. I like it. Got a last question for you, and it's more open question as well, in the way that usually I ask at the end if you've got an advice that you would like to give to the younger generation who are building AI-first companies, or if not, would you like to share something we haven't talked on in the interview?
Yeah, sure. I'm I do a lot of mentorship. I continue to do mentorship of young people. I think I get a lot of value out of it. So I do address these kind of some of the issues that the youth of the world, the people I speak to come to me for. And I think that I think people really still need to, especially young people, they need to do the work. And I think with the like AI at our fingertips now, that establishing a worldview is really important. I try and encourage all the people that I mentor to the best that they can. If you go back to my kind of goal as a young person was to travel the world and have a business pay for it. That's one of the kind of aspirations I like to gift to other people and say, it is definitely possible. Put that onto your vision board and it can definitely happen because I'm an example of that. And so I encourage in a world where it's possible to spend less time interacting with real people, it's definitely possible. You can create a business and not talk to a single soul, right, today. Is I encourage the people that I mentor to actually build their networks and to build that human-to-human conversation. Because as AI starts to become more pervasive in our lives, like human-to-human interaction will become more important. Like deals are still done between humans, right? When you get to the higher level and you go into deal making, you go into raising capital, you can go in all those things. Those are very human things and those will be human things for a long while. So I really would, if young people are listening to this podcast, I would encourage them to don't forget their social skills, to practice those things because they will become even more important as AI becomes more pervasive.
Okay, thanks, David. This was a very good advice. I feel you about the traveling part too, because I also travel a lot in my life. I was fortunate to do it too. So yeah, this was very encouraging to like, just do whatever, like you can do anything. I think that's a very, very beautiful way to end this conversation. I appreciate all this chatting. It was great. I have a great time. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Flora. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.